the behavior of functions or solutions of differential equations. If a parameter is large or small. And we can't find an exact solution. And it will often be the case that we also can't find a convergent series approximation to whatever we're interested in. So frequently, the only or at least the easiest way to find an approximate solution to a differential equation or approximate value of a function is to construct an asymptotic series. And so I'll define what's meant by an asymptotic series more carefully later. But basically, an asymptotic series is one that approaches the true value as the parameter, assuming it's valid, as the parameter goes to 0, the asymptotic series approaches the value of the function as the parameter gets small. Not as we take more terms. And I'll define that more carefully in a bit. But first, I want to go through an example to see why it's often the case that we can't construct convergent series approximations to functions we're interested in. And this technique will be used all the time in QFT. So one object that we often study in QFT is the partition function z, which we can write in a form that's similar to what we saw in the first lecture for one of the simple examples, 5-4 theory, that we'll study extensively in QFT 1 and 2. So we'll come back to this example, and we will construct asymptotic series approximations to this quantity in those courses. But for now, let's just look at a toy model that you can think of like a zero-dimensional version of this problem. So in zero dimensions, there's no derivatives. So we just have, there's no integrals here. So we just have an integral of some number with a quadratic and a quartic term in the exponential. So we can think of a toy example being a 0D version of this, which is just write it like this, e to the minus x squared minus lambda x to the fourth. Now this is an integral. The 0D version, unlike the QFT version, is a version that is simple enough that we can actually evaluate it in terms of some special functions. But let's ignore that fact and just pretend we want to approximate this integral. So if lambda is 0, we all know what to do here. Then it's just a Gaussian integral, and that's not a problem. We all know how to do Gaussian integrals. It's this lambda x to the fourth term that makes it tricky to actually evaluate the integral. And so one strategy that we can take to try to approximate this integral is to replace the e to the minus lambda x to the fourth term with its Taylor series. So if we do that, what we get is this Taylor series. OK. And In tutorial, we also saw how to evaluate integrals with Gaussian weight, so integral of a polynomial with Gaussian weight. So this if we swap the sum and the integral, we know how to evaluate each of the terms on the right-hand side. So let's go ahead and do that. It's not clear whether we're allowed to swap the sum and the integral. But let's just go ahead, because there's not very much else we can do. And so if we do that, what we get is this expression. Factorial. And so now this is an integral we can evaluate. There are many ways we can do it. You saw one in tutorial. This integral here is just, this should be for n. Yes. This integral we can also evaluate in another way by just noting that if we do the change of variables, u squared equals x, u equals x squared, then this just becomes a gamma integral. To see that, let's do the change of variables. So then we get u to the 2n minus a half from the measure e to the minus u du. And this is just gamma of 2n plus a half. So we found z of lambda is sum n equals 0 to infinity minus 1 to the n, lambda to the n, gamma to n plus a half over n factorial. Great. So what's the problem? We found a serious expansion for z of lambda. Why do I need to teach you about asymptotics? So let's look at this series and think about what we got a little more carefully. So we know that for large n, gamma of 2n plus a half should be approximately 2n factorial. The half versus 1 doesn't really matter in that limit, which is certainly a lot bigger than n factorial squared. So if we write out 2n factorial, we have 2n times 2n minus 1 all the way down to n plus 1. Then times n factorial. And that first product, each term is much greater than the corresponding term in n factorial. So this is a lot bigger than this. And so that means we've got something here which is much bigger than n factorial divided by n factorial. So this coefficients for large n grow factorially or faster, which means this sum doesn't converge. It doesn't converge for any non-zero lambda. So the remainder of the lecture, or well, not the remainder of the lecture, but the next little bit, I'm going to try to tell you how to make sense of the right-hand side. It would be horrible if we had to give up on this technique of switching the sum and the integral. After all, it turns out to be one of the key steps that we need to do perturbation theory in some formulations of QFT. So I'll claim that even though this series on the right-hand side doesn't converge, it does make sense. So we'll do next is define, or try to understand in what sense this series approximates our original function or original integral. Okay, so we need a few definitions. So our first definition is much less than. So we say that a function f is much less than a function g as x approaches x naught if the limit as x goes to x naught of f over g is 0. So this is a different sense of much less than you're probably used to. So first of all, note this definition. So we can only say that f is much less than g if we specify a limit point. It doesn't make sense. This first part of the statement doesn't make sense. A function f could be much less than g as x approaches x naught, and g could be much less than f as x approaches x1, for instance. So that's certainly possible. So what are some examples? So one example that's probably not surprising is that x is much less than 1 over x as x goes to 0. So x goes to 0, 1 over x blows up in this limit, so it's probably what you'd guess. Another less intuitive example is that x squared, which is always positive, or 0, is much less than negative 1 as x goes to 0. So x squared is always greater than minus 1, but it's much less than minus 1. It satisfies this definition. OK.
That's only true at 0.
Well, only true at 0, yes.
But you get this strange kind of
yes.
happening.
Yeah. All right. So our second definition is f is asymptotic to g as x approaches x naught. And so this is true if f minus g is much less than g as x goes to x naught, or equivalently, if the limit as x goes to x naught of f over g is 1. Okay. So look at some examples to try to get some intuition for this. So simple example is the cosine of x is asymptotic to minus 1 as x goes to pi. So if it approaches a limit, it's asymptotic to that limit. Usually. And the second example, let's look at, so x squared certainly approaches 0 as x goes to 0. But is it asymptotic to 0? Well, we can look at the definition. So the definition, if x squared is asymptotic to 0 as x goes to 0, then the limit of x squared divided by 0 is 1, which is certainly not true. So this doesn't work. So no function is asymptotic to 0. So even though x squared approaches 0, it's not asymptotic to 0. There's a third example. Look at x squared and x. Again, as x goes to 0, these both approach the same limit. But they do so at different rates. And so again, if we look at the definition, limit of x squared over x is 0 as x goes to 0, not 1. So x squared is not asymptotic to x as x goes to 0. So two functions are asymptotic if they basically approach the limit at the same rate. That's what we need. Okay. And our final definition is definition of an asymptotic series. And so we say that y has the asymptotic series. As x approaches x naught. So again, asymptotic series are only valid about a certain point. And so this is true. This is the asymptotic series for this if y of x minus the partial sum is much less than the last term. As x goes to x naught, for all n. And so what we constructed up there in our example was an asymptotic series valid in the limit at lambda goes to 0. Yes?
Why don't we include a subscript big N on the right-hand side of that? Because like it could have some like vast growing factors that actually matter.
OK, so we're assuming the ANs don't depend on x. And so if they don't depend on x, this difference is much less than this, it will also be much less than AN. So remember, much less than means that the limit of the ratio goes to 0. So we can put that in there if we like. But it is crucial that these ANs don't depend on x. OK. So a few comments, and I'll elaborate on some of these later today and tomorrow. So convergent series become better approximations as we take more terms. Asymptotic series, on the other hand, become better approximations as x goes to x naught with a fixed number of terms. Nothing in our definition here guaranteed that taking more terms would make the approximation better. And in fact, for the interesting asymptotic series, which don't also converge, most of the time, if you take too many terms, your approximation gets worse and worse. Some asymptotic series are convergent. Some convergent series are asymptotic, but in general, these are different things. There's an important class of convergent series that are guaranteed to be asymptotic. So if convergent series has a finite radius of convergence, then it's also asymptotic. But in general, these are different things. Comment number two, the first comment. Next comment is that suppose f of lambda is asymptotic to some series in lambda. As lambda goes to zero, then so is f of lambda plus e to the minus lambda squared. So the reason for that is that e to the minus lambda squared goes to zero faster than any polynomial. So if we add this term over here, e to the minus lambda squared is much less than lambda to the n for any n as lambda goes to zero. So this term is invisible to an asymptotic series approximation. And so this in physics, so it's known as a non-perturbative function. And in general, they're most important when the perturbation series gives zero, but not always. And these are relevant for things like tunneling or in QCD, the U1 axial current nonstop conservation. And so we'll, later in the year in the review and exploration courses, QFT3, for instance, we'll talk a lot more about these functions. So asymptotic series are not unique in the sense that several different functions can have the same asymptotic series. On the other hand, they are unique in the sense that if we find two different asymptotic series expansions for the same function, those asymptotic series have to be, the coefficients have to be equal. So they're unique and non-unique. But this is the interesting non-uniqueness, and I'll come back and say a little bit more about this tomorrow.
Sorry, I'm not just going to thank you, but does e to the minus lambda squared not approach 1 as lambda goes to 0?
Sorry, this should have been 1 over. Yes. 1 over. Yeah. Okay. More comment is, so we'll often be interested in, or not, at least sometimes we'll be interested in asymptotic relations on the complex plane. So if we have two functions that are asymptotically related, then this asymptotic relation is generally only valid for some range of the argument of Z minus E naught. And this is known as Stokes' phenomena, and I'll talk more about this tomorrow. But for instance, we could suppose that F contains a function like e to the minus z that's much less than g as z goes to z naught with the argument of z equal to 0. But if we take the argument of z to be pi, then that e to the minus z will be important. So this generally only works for some range of arguments. OK. So most useful, definitely not the only useful, but the one that we'll see the most this year, the most useful method for finding asymptotic series involves or requires that we have an integral representation for whatever we're trying to approximate. So Q of t, it'll often be given to us. We have a path integral or functional integral. But sometimes we have to do some work to put whatever we're trying to find an asymptotic series for in an integral form. And you'll see one example of how to do that in a tutorial. But there are many other techniques that I just don't have time to go through. But. So quite a few steps in, at least for the general method, for getting the asymptotic series from the integral. So we'll go through several examples with that involve more and more of the general process. And by the end of today, or beginning of tomorrow, we'll see the completely general method, the saddle point. Or steepest descent method for finding an asymptotic series from certain classes of integrals that arise fairly frequently. So our first example that will illustrate some of the techniques, we need to find an asymptotic series for an integral. Is a classic example, Stirling's approximation. Okay, so Stirling's approximation gives us an approximate value of n factorial for large n. And we know from last week that n factorial is gamma of n plus 1, which we know how to write as an integral. So we're set on that front. And so we know gamma of x plus 1 is the integral e to the minus t d to the x dt. And so the first thing we notice when we look at this integral is that the integrand is only large in a small region. So if x is large, then t to the x goes to 0 very quickly near x equals 0, and e to the minus t goes to 0 very quickly as t goes to infinity. So it's going to be our basic strategy is we're going to figure out what this function looks like near its maximum, and then write that an integral of whatever this looks like near its maximum in a form that we can evaluate explicitly. To do that, it's useful first to do some changes of variables so we can see more clearly what it looks like near its maximum. We set t equal to wx, and we get gamma of x plus 1. It's x to the x plus 1. It's the integral of e to the minus x w minus log w. And let's call this w minus log w f of w. So in this form, we see that the integrand is maximized when f of w is minimized. So the minimum value of f of w is f prime of w is just 1 minus 1 over w is 0 at w equals 1. We expect most of the contribution to this integral comes from the region where w is approximately 1. And so we can write f of w as 1 plus 1 half. For Taylor, expand it. The next term is the coefficient half. And if we plug that back into our expression for gamma of x, what we get is this integral. And so this is an integral we know how to do, at least if we neglect the dot, dot, dot. So it's just a Gaussian integral. So at least almost if the range of integration was correct. But let's just do that. So let's first neglect the dot, dot, dot. And second, note that we can extend the range of the integral without changing the value very much, because e to the minus x over 2 times w minus 1 squared is very small if x, if w is 0 or less. Most of the contribution comes from where w is near 1. So we don't change the integral very much. And then this is just a Gaussian integral we know how to do. get x to the x plus 1, e to the minus x root 2 pi over x. If we kept more terms in the dot, 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 we could improve this approximation. And if we did that, so we see what we get just from the first term is that gamma of x plus 1 divided by root 2 pi x to the x plus a half e to the minus x is asymptotic to 1. And if we got more terms, we'd get more terms in the asymptotic series. This is valid as x goes to infinity. So we see what we found is an asymptotic series not for gamma, like we set out to find, but gamma divided by some extra factors. But that doesn't really impede the usefulness of this method at all. And so these would come from the more terms in the plus dot, dot, dot. OK, so that's one example. So now that we've seen a simple method, a simple example of how to get an asymptotic series from an integral expansion, let's try to go through what we do in a more general case. The basic procedure is going to be the same. We're going to look for a region where the integrand is maximized, then try to, in a region around where the integrand is maximized, write it as a Gaussian integral. That one involves switching the order of summation and integration. So we'll get an asymptotic series. And then we can evaluate as many terms as we like in the asymptotic series. So there'll be some more subtleties we'll have to deal with in the general case, but the general procedure is the same. So this is the method of steepest descents. Or the saddle point method. These are the same. And so our problem now is to approximate I of z, which we'll assume is given by some contour integral of a function of this following form. And we want to approximate this for large real z for now. And so OK, so now if this is a complex integral, then that right away introduces something new we have to think about. So first of all, we'd expect that where this integral is maximized is mostly controlled by f. If we change f a little bit, we're changing the integrand a lot because it's in the exponential. And z is going to infinity. So expect f controls where the dominant contributions to the integral come from. And we might expect dominant contributions to come from the region or near a point which I'll give a name, W naught, at which U, which is the name I'll give to the real part of F of W, is a local max. Okay, so far that's basically the same as we did in Stirling's approximation. But if this is a complex integral, we also have to worry about the imaginary part of f. So we must also demand that v is the imaginary part of f, w is constant. Otherwise, the contributions with different phase will cancel out. And so,
what do you mean by that?
So, suppose near W naught, the phase of W is changing along the path. So, if we do this integral in a small region through W naught along that integral, if if the imaginary part of f of w is changing rapidly, then we've got an integral that's where the phase is changing very rapidly, and so that will in general cancel out. So like an integral like e to the ix dx, so the phase is changing rapidly. If the phase is changing rapidly, then for instance, this will be positive in some parts and negative in some parts, or have argument pi over 2 in some parts.
It's changing rapidly as we move to on the contour?
Along the contour, yes. So even if f is only changing slowly, the imaginary part of f is only changing slowly, remember z is going to infinity. So e to the zf will be changing very rapidly. OK. Is that clear? OK. So. Let's suppose that t hat is the tangent vector to the curve at w naught. And let's write w is x plus iy. So what do these conditions tell us about the relation between grad v, grad u, and t? So first of all, we should have that the gradient of u dot t should be 0 for w to be a local max. That's just what we mean by a local maximum. Secondly, we should have grad v at t is 0 for the phase to be constant. But we also know that grad u dot grad v is 0 by the Cauchy-Riemann equations. So it seems if we have a contradiction, because we have three orthogonal vectors in a two-dimensional space, which is a contradiction unless one or more of these vectors is zero. Okay, so we certainly don't want the tangent vector to be zero. If it is zero, then our curve is a point, and we don't really have an integral expression in that case. So let's assume t hat is not zero. So that leaves u or v could be zero. So if grad u is zero, then by the Cauchy-Riemann equations, so that means du dx is zero, which is equal to dv dy, and du dy is zero, which is equal to minus dv dx. So grad v is zero, and vice versa. So we've concluded that both grad u and grad v have to be zero at w naught. So w naught is a critical point or inflection point.
Can you pull the board up?
Yes. It seems to be broken. I'm sorry. Do you want me to write this again?
I think you can just pull the board up.
Pull?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it hasn't been working for a while now.
Okay.
We've seen some lecturers pull it up.
Okay.
Is that not?
It's in the board.
Since we got to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So so that tells us then that W naught is a critical point. And okay, so that's what happens at the point W naught. So now let's think about what we want to happen near W naught, but not precisely at W naught. So near W naught, so if we look at our equations over here, it's okay if the value of the real part of f changes a little bit. So we don't really care about whether one holds near W naught, but not exactly at W naught. So that's not so important to us. But we still want the phase to be constant. Otherwise, again, we can get cancellations. So we still want number two to hold, and three always holds. So we still want two to hold near W naught at along the path near, but not precisely at W naught. And so that means we go away from the critical point. Then we don't need one to hold anymore. So we still do have two and three still hold. So that means that grad u should be parallel to the tangent vector near, but not at W naught. So that means that we're going along the steepest descent. It's a complex function has, so the real part of a complex function has no maximum, it only has saddles. So so U has no maximum. Well, so we have that. So we still want two to hold. So u, so t is in some direction, and grad v is in another direction.
Okay.
V is perpendicular to grad u, so it has to be parallel or anti-parallel to t.
I guess
it's parallel because it's 0, 2, so I can just write near W naught. This is 0 at W naught. So.
That means
it could be. So if we draw this. So in other words, one holds at W naught, and two and three hold in a region around W naught. Okay. So given these considerations, we can now try to do the same thing we did before. In the Stirling's approximation example. So we can expand f of w in a neighborhood of w naught, and then we get this, and there's no linear term because W naught's a critical point. Which seems promising. This is a term that we can do by Gaussian integration. And so it'll be useful to pull out the phase here. So we'll just rewrite the whole thing. But just rewrite this as e to the I delta naught times the absolute value f w naught. And so we have, we're integrating along some curve in the complex plane, and we're trying to approximate the function near W naught. And so, if we say the integral is dominated by a region around W naught, if we approximate the curve by a line in a region, we're not changing very much. And so let's say that the linear part of the curve is W is W naught plus e to the I phi t. This is the linear approximation to our curve. So we want f of w to be something minus 1/2 t squared f double prime w naught squared. So if it looks like this, then the local maximum for our original integral occurs at w naught. And as we go away from w naught, and the distance away from w naught is parameterized by t, then we should decrease the integrand. So this is what we want the integral, want f to look like. So we just compare this expression with this expression. We can see what angle we have to go through the point w naught at. So we just compare these two expressions. We get w minus w naught squared e to the I delta naught is e to the 2i phi t squared. E to the I. So this expression is equal to this using our linear approximation. And we want this to be equal to minus t squared. So that gives us a relationship between phi, which is the angle that we have to go through the critical point for our approximation to make sense, and delta, which is the phase of the second derivative of f. And so this tells us that e to the 2 I phi e to the I delta naught is equal to e to the plus or minus I phi. So the plus or minus reflects the fact that our approximation works equally well if we go this way as the opposite way. Okay. So given this, we can put our results back into the integral. And it takes a form very similar to the one we had when we did Stirling's approximation. Okay, so what have we accomplished? So approximation is, so the constant term, we can just pull out, integral. And we're approximating the whole integral. By some linear part of the contour. And we'll say it's approximately linear when t goes from minus t1 to plus t1. And then this function g just sits out front. We haven't done anything with it, so just put it back. And then e to the zf term we've manipulated, so it takes this form. And so we've done a change of variables from w to t, so we need to put in change of variables factor. this should be t equals 0. Okay, so this looks very much like the integral we had before. It's a Gaussian integral. And we can do Gaussian integrals. It almost looks like a Gaussian integral. We first need to extend the range of integration. And we also need to Taylor expand G. So we can extend the range of integration, again, by the same argument that this integrand gets small very rapidly away from 0. So if we just add in the rest of the integral from minus t1 down to minus infinity, and from t1 to infinity, we're not changing the value of the integral very much. We don't know how to do the integral of a Gaussian times some general function, but if we Taylor expand, we know how to integrate polynomials with Gaussian weight. And this derivative is just e to the I phi. So now it's in a form where we can do the integrals. And we get our asymptotic relation for our asymptotic series for I of z. And we find something very nice happens. And that is that the phases cancel out. So in this integral, we just have the absolute value, but we have this extra phase sitting around, which cancels out. So the phases cancel. So using absolute value of f double prime at W naught is e to the minus 2i phi f double prime. So finding the correct contour, so if this whole approximation makes sense, figuring out which angle you should go through the critical points is crucial. But assuming that the approximations we make are consistent, the angle doesn't show up in our final answer. Okay. So, first, are there any questions about this?
What would happen if you had many omegas with the same value? They are the same maximum. They have the same value.
Several maximum. So in that case, approximating the integral by the integral over the whole contour by the integral over small regions around one maximum wouldn't be a good approximation. But if we just sum together the contributions from each of the maxima, exactly the same argument would apply around each of the maxima. And so in that case, we just have several different contributions.
And we have auxiliary functions?
We had a periodic function with infinitely many. So, well, assuming this applied, we would just add up all of them. But you might want to think carefully about whether or not this method does apply in that case, if it's purely periodic.
So, in this process, yeah, you sort of dictate the shape of your contour near W0, W0, right? But like, in the original integral, you know, the contour is there. Like, you're going to write something like, we had I of z equals to some integral over some contour. That contour is fixed. So the
contour, it's very common that the original contour in the integral does not satisfy these conditions. And we have to deform the contour before we can use this method. And we'll see some examples of that both in tutorial this afternoon and in lecture tomorrow. So, the final answer doesn't depend on the angle, but the consistency of the approximations does. We have to go through critical points, and it has to be at a certain angle.
For example, what if your contour doesn't go through critical points, like?
Yes, we'll see some examples like that where we still can use it. It's not obvious that you can. We've seen already. It's subtle, even if our contour does go through a single critical point. But there's more to come, and we'll talk about that some tomorrow. But the last couple minutes, I just want to go for a very simple example that doesn't introduce any more complications. That's just an example where we're given a contour that does pass through a single critical point. And so our example will be the Hankel function. The first kind, which has I won't show you where this comes from, but it has a contour integral representation. This contour C1 asymptotes to minus pi and pi, and it goes like this through the origin along this direction. Okay, so this integral is, let's say, already in the form that we want it to be in. So we can compare this to our original integral, and we see g of w is e to the I u w. F is I cosine of w. And so f has infinitely many critical points. But so add 2 pi n. pi n. But only one is on the contour. So the only one on the contour is w equals 0. And so we only need to include the contribution from this critical point. And so the angle drops out of the final calculation, as we've seen. But you can show that this angle here should be pi over 4. And it basically already goes through the critical point at that angle. So then we're done. There's not really much more work to be done in this case. And so we can just basically plug in our results and get the asymptotic relation valid as z goes to infinity. And we get this expression. Second order, get this. And I just want to make, before I finish, I just want to make one comment about this dot, dot, dot. So we've completely neglected the higher derivatives in F. So at some point, the higher derivatives in F will become more important than the higher derivatives in G. Precisely where that occurs will depend on the precise forms of F and G. And so that's a difficult question to answer in general. Usually, though, in practice, we're only interested in one or two terms in the series. And if the method is applicable, the first term is always this one. And it's rare that the third derivatives of F are more important than the second derivatives of G. It's possible. But so just a word of warning, if you are using looking for more than one term, then f triple prime or f with four derivatives can sometimes be important. So that's a introduction to asymptotics and the method of steepest descents. And so tomorrow we'll talk a bit more about how to use this method in the complex plane and see. So I briefly alluded to Stokes' phenomena. So we'll go through an example and see precisely how that arises. So some interesting things can happen with the contours as you change the angle at which you take z to infinity in the complex plane. And then we'll also discuss somewhat what summing divergent series. So these asymptotic series in general are divergent. And so you may be wondering, why are they useful? As physicists, we use perturbation theory, but we're really interested in a finite value of the perturbation parameter. So how do these help us? And we'll discuss that a bit more tomorrow. All right, I'll see you this afternoon.